Reverend Sir and friends. Nowadays, we all know quite a lot of people are very much exercised by what they call the problem of communication. Only this morning, I happened to look into the window of a bookshop and I noticed a new book, at least one of which I hadn't heard before, called The Psychology of Human Communication, which seemed quite an interesting sort of title. One might say, of course, it is significant in a way that communication should have become, for many people nowadays, a problem at all. But that is neither here nor there. We may say that, very broadly speaking, there are two principal means or modes of communication between human beings. First of all, there is the conceptual communication in terms of thoughts, ideas, and so on. And secondly, communication in terms of, or in the form of, images. The first type of communication, that through abstract ideas, through concepts, is addressed more particularly to the rational, even the critical intelligence. The second mode, or the second type of communication, that through images, aims rather at the unconscious depths which lie beneath the rational intelligence. The first type of communication, that through concepts, through abstract ideas, is employed by science, by philosophy, whereas the second, through images, is employed by all forms of imaginative literature. Now, religion, we may say, spiritual traditions, we may say, employ both. They communicate through abstract ideas. They also communicate through images. But perhaps we may say that they tend to rely, certainly in their more popular forms, more on the latter, more on the images. They tend to try to communicate more with the unconscious depths, to move and to stir them. Now, in the course of this series of lectures on aspects of Buddhist psychology, we've passed, as it were, from one mode or one type of communication to the other. We started in the first lectures which we had with a more conceptual type of approach. But soon we found ourselves where we are now, in the midst of images, in the midst of symbols, even in the midst of archetypes. And today we come to the mandala, which the subtitle of the lecture describes as the tantric symbol of integration. Now, once we can see that there are three principal topics which fall to be considered, or three questions which at this point we may ask, or which naturally suggest themselves. First of all, what is a mandala? That's the first question. Secondly, what do we mean by integration? And thirdly, in what way is the mandala a symbol of integration? Now, we're going to deal with these three topics, these three questions, but we're not going to deal with them in a strictly logical fashion. When dealing with material of this sort, we may say, this is quite impossible. We can't deal with this sort of material in a strictly logical sequence or order, and even if we could, it would give a false impression, perhaps, about the nature of the material itself.